You're listening to the MLB Pipeline Podcast with your host, Ed Randall.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, and welcome to the MLB.com Pipeline Podcast. I'm joined by our draft and minor league experts, Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis. Guys, great to be with you as always. The 17th Sirius XM All-Star Futures game begins at 3 p.m. Eastern on July 12th and can be seen live here on MLB.com as well as on the MLB Network. Guys, which pitcher are you most looking forward to seeing, Jonathan?
Boy, you know, these questions are always tough because I'm like, I love seeing all of them, but that's kind of a cop-out. I think if I was going to pick one guy, I think I'm going to stick with Lucas Giolito. Even though he pitched in the Futures game last year, didn't go so well for him. I know that he is eager to give it another go this year, another year removed from Tommy John surgery. He's just a really fun guy to watch, especially in a one-inning kind of thing. He'll just air it out. Might see some triple digits on the radar gun, which is, you know, always exciting at the Futures game. So I think that if I'm going to pick one arm, that's the guy I'll pick.
Great. Jim, what do you think?
I'm excited about seeing Giolito again, too. I do think he probably has the best overall stuff in the minor leagues, and he is the best pitching prospect in the minor leagues. But I'm excited, I think, to see Alex Reyes the most, the Cardinals right-hander. You know, kind of an interesting backstory on him. He's a guy who began his, he was going to high school in New Jersey and was really more of a third baseman. And after his junior year, I guess, to focus on baseball and hopefully get more attention, he went down to live with his grandmother in the Dominican Republic and kind of took off on the mound. And the Cardinals signed him. And I mean, he might hit 100 miles an hour as consistently as any minor league starter. He's got a power breaking ball as well. I don't think he's as polished as Giolito, but he might move just as quick. He's only not even 21 yet. And, when you see these guys, well, what's kind of fun with the Futures games, you see these guys in one-inning stints, and I think they do pitch for the gun. And I would deem him highly likely to hit 100 miles an hour when we see him in Cincinnati.
Jim, let me stay with you. What about the hitter you'd like to see, like the next Joey Gallo, for goodness sakes?
Yeah, I don't know if we have a guy with quite that much power, and I would say Kyle Schwarber, except we got to see him for a week in the big leagues already, so we've seen some of him. I guess I'm kind of interested in seeing some of the younger guys in the game. I think that, if you look at the youngest players in this game, it's guys like Ozhaino Albies, a middle infielder for the Braves, who's speed-oriented prospect. I think he's very similar to Jose Peraza, who will be making his Braves debut very soon, I believe. The Red Sox have a couple of really young guys, and Rafael Devers, a third baseman, and Manuel Margot, an outfielder. But all that aside, I'm going to stick with the U.S. guy. And I know, Jonathan, I know you appreciate the fact I just mentioned three guys right there. But J.P. Crawford, I'm really interested in watching play. It seems like this has been the year of the shortstop, not just in the draft where the first three picks were shortstops, but we've seen guys like Carlos Correa and Francisco Lindor and Addison Russell all get promoted. And I think we'll see Corey Seager promoted at some point, too. And by the end of the year, J.P. Crawford might be the best shortstop prospect in the minor leagues, and I'm excited to see him play.
Jonathan, what about you, the hitter you'd love to see in the game, you're looking forward to?
Well, Jim just mentioned every hitter on both rosters, so it kind of leaves me with no way. He's pinned me into a corner. So thank you for that. There are several other guys, and I think the guy that I'm curious to see because I haven't really seen much of him. There are guys that, I like to watch Aaron Judge hit and things like that, but, I've seen him a little bit. I think I'll take Nomar Mazara from the Texas Rangers organization. This is a guy who's kind of, I don't know if he's under the radar, but maybe a little bit. But, he's a guy who's just 20. He's in AA already. I know we're going to be talking with Jesse Sanchez about international signs, and he was a major international sign, and then sort of was kind of forgotten. Last year, he had 22 homers, as a teenager across a couple of levels. Now he's in Double A, and he's hitting for average. He still draws some walks, but the power potential, I think, is what excites me, especially in an exhibition setting like the Futures game.
Jonathan, stay with you. Give me a pitcher-hitter matchup you'd love to see.
Well, I guess the easy thing for me to do is to pair up my two choices and say, well, I want to see Giolito face Nomar Mazara. But I also like the idea of, you know, flipping it around and say, like, Alex Reyes against a more advanced hitter like Kyle Schwarber. I think seeing a young pitcher like that with that kind of just unbelievable stuff, just power against a guy who's an advanced hitter with some pop. So maybe Reyes against Schwarber or a guy like Aaron Judge.
Jim?
Yeah, I was going to go with Alex Reyes against the sluggers on the U.S. team, you know, whether it's Schwarber, whether it's Aaron Judge. It's pure power versus pure power. You know, Josh Bell's another interesting one. That's the matchup I think I'm most looking forward to, is seeing what Alex Reyes can do. And hopefully we don't know the lineups or the pitching rotations yet, but hopefully it will align to where we get to see him against the heart of that U.S. order.
That's great, guys. We now welcome to the broadcast our all-knowing, all-seeing, all-omnipotent international expert. He writes Jesse Sanchez at the Park. He's not only that, he's Jesse Sanchez on the MLB Pipeline podcast, for goodness sakes.
Hey.
Jesse, great to have you. July 2nd marks the start of the international signing period. The Yankees, for one, were said to have had a very successful signing period last year, and they spent a ton of money. Who are the top players that teams like the Yankees have on their radar?
Well, I think that one of the most familiar names, and first of all, that was quite an introduction. Wow, I don't know who can live up to any of that all-knowing.
I get paid well, Jesse. I get paid well.
Yeah, you do. You do. And my check's in the mail too for that. But on our prospect watch, we have the top 30 international prospects, and number one is a Cuban outfielder named Eddie Julio Martinez. He's 20 years old. He's been compared to Andrew Jones. He's a very interesting player. Second's a right-handed pitcher, 18-year-old pitcher named Yadier Alvarez, another power guy. Number three is Lucius Fox in Bahamas, and one name that I really wanted to mention, I think, what can resonate with a lot of people, is a 16-year-old kid named Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And he is who you think he is. I mean, he's tons of power. He's a pretty good hitter. He's an outfielder. He's a little bit bigger than his father was at that age. I think Vladdy Sr. was a little bit more thin. He's kind of a lanky, where Jr. is kind of a little bit of a thick body. And that, you know, has some scouts kind of concerned whether he can stay in the outfield. Is he going to move to first base? But Vladimir Guerrero Jr., there's another son of a major league player, Fernando Tatis Jr., is another player to watch. I mean, there are tons of great international prospects out there, and they're from all over the world. Cuba, Bahamas, Panama, Venezuela. This July 2nd is a really exciting day for these teenagers. It's a really big date on the MLB calendar. It's when teams can fill up their systems with teenagers, and hopefully one of these guys will turn into the next Miguel Cabrera, one of these guys will turn into the next Vladdy, those types of players. But they're also hoping these are the guys who are going to fill up their minor league systems. Could be 25th guy on the roster, could be some minor league, you know, fill-ins. It's just an important day, and I think a lot of people are really looking forward to it.
Jesse, before the guys jump in, I want to ask you about the Bahamas. You mentioned a player from the Bahamas. I think a lot of people are very surprised to hear that there's baseball in the Bahamas.
Right, there is. I mean, and that's one of the emerging markets out there. I think the MLB scout teams are really looking toward expanding, globalizing, growing the game, I think is one of the phrases that's out there. Central America is a hot spot, Panama, Nicaragua, places like that. But the Bahamas is another place where scouts, teams, MLB officials are going down there looking for baseball players because they're smart kids, they're good athletes, they're versatile, they can play multiple sports. And it's a really interesting dynamic. There is baseball in the Bahamas. Lucius Fox is the top player from the Bahamas. Some believe, you know, he's the face of baseball, the present and future in the Bahamas. You know, a really outfielder, I mean, a shortstop who can do a lot of things. And I think people hope he can represent, you know, what Bahamas baseball is now, what it can be. And a lot of people are kind of hoping the best for him.
He's a really interesting story because I saw him in the East Coast Pro Showcase last summer, and he was a middle infielder from Florida who honestly didn't stand out all that much then. A lot of speed, but he was not one of these guys who's like, wow, this is a first rounder. And Jesse and I, we talked about this a while ago when his name started popping up as creating a whole lot of buzz and rumors of huge bonuses. And I even asked a couple of Florida scouts. I was like, what happened? You know, he went down to the Bahamas and just exploded and really stood out to scouts in workouts and showcases and things like that for international scouts, and became much more of a guy than I think he would have been as a draft guy. Right, Jesse?
Right. And there are a couple different theories on Fox. I mean, like you said, he's a really interesting guy. And I think one thing international scouts look towards, because they're really projecting what happens on the international market, is up until recently, these kids were not playing in games. So they're measuring on their tools, you know, their hit tool, power, run, arm, field tools. And so they kind of, these international scouts really focus on that. And from Lucius Fox, they see these tools. You know, they see a 6'2", 175-pound kid who can throw, who can run. He looks what they're supposed to look like. And I guess the biggest knock on him, as far as from the international side, is they haven't seen him play enough in games. So I guess, you know, one argument is, you know, the domestic scouts have seen him in games. He was just okay. The international see his tools and they're blown away. I actually had a conversation with Fox about the subject. You know, how have you made such leaps and, you know, broad leaps and bounds over the past year, where the opinion of your, you know, ability and future has changed so much? And he said, I've gained weight. I've gained 15 pounds of muscle. I have more power. I can throw better. I can hit farther. You know, I'm honed my skills. I've worked really hard in the Bahamas. So I think you put all that together, it's going to be really interesting to see where he goes and what kind of player he ends up being. Because, like you mentioned, the domestic guys have one version of him. The international guys have another version of him. And we will see once he starts playing in the United States against, you know, minor leaguers here, you know, who he is.
And Jesse, you know, could you talk a little bit? It seems like, you know, last year, you know, as Ed alluded to, the Yankees made the biggest splash. It seems like this year that team is going to be the Dodgers. I mean, based on reports that you've heard, you know, and it's kind of a crazy situation because most of these guys, even though they can't officially sign until July 2nd, have deals pretty much done. But, I mean, it sounds like of the players you mentioned at the top, the Dodgers are one of the front runners for Martinez. They're the favorites for Alvarez and Lucius Fox. I think they're also the favorite, according to your reporting, for Starling Heredia, who's one of the top prospects. And they might even spend, you know, $2 million or so on a shortstop named Ronnie Brito. I mean, how much do you think they're going to spend on this international crop? And they have to be the team that's going to make the biggest splash, aren't they?
I think so. I think last year the team that made the biggest splash were the Yankees, where they signed, you know, 27 guys. You know, they were in the, I'm trying to think, remember, they spent $30 million when you factor in the penalty. There was so much money they invested on the market. This year, the team to watch is going to be the Dodgers. They are viewing, scouting, evaluating, and appear like they're going to sign everybody. I mean, that's kind of the joke down there in Latin America, that you can always count the Dodgers in on everybody. And just be ready, because those are, if you have a good player and you want to sign a good player, that's going to be your biggest competition. I mean, they're really going for it. I mean, they're, like you mentioned, Yadier Alvarez, right-handed pitcher, Fox, Ronnie Brito, Starling Heredia, which is probably one of my favorite players down there. I mean, his nickname is Pit Bull, and it's hilarious. I mean, and he looks like a pit bull, and he takes pride in that. You know, he's a really muscular guy. He plays a little bit like Yasiel Puig. That's one of his favorite players. He plays with his hair on fire. He goes 100 miles an hour. I mean, that's another guy they've been linked to. They're really going for it, you know. And I've talked to some Dodger sources recently, and they're kind of getting back to what they were. You got to remember, the Dodgers were the pioneers in Latin America. They're one of the pioneers in the Dominican Republic. they've always had an international presence, and they're getting back to that. I mean, it's obvious. They really, it does not appear that they have many financial limits, I mean, or restraints there, and they are going for it. Obviously, this means they're going to be in the maximum penalty for the next 2 years. They won't be able to sign players for, you know, over $300,000 because they're blowing past their limit, but they're going for it. My take is, you know, talking to Dodgers sources, is they see these players that they're going to sign as potential first rounders. I mean, they're kind of equating it to that. So if we can sign all these guys, let's do it. We'll pay the penalty. We don't know if an international draft is going to come in the future. We don't really know what the system is going to be like in the future. What we do know is we can sign these players. We can afford to pay the penalty. Let's get them in our system. And hopefully they'll end up at Dodger Stadium in 5 years or something.
And following up on that, Jesse, I mean, you mentioned the future. You know, Jonathan and I spent a lot of time covering the draft, and the penalties in the draft are much more severe and restrict spending, because if you go more than 5% over your draft bonus pool, you start losing first-round picks in future drafts. And if you did what the Dodgers were doing this year, you would lose a couple first-round picks as well as pay a penalty tax. And the international system, as you mentioned, you only have, you know, you get restricted from what you can spend the next 2 years. You get a maximum what you could spend on a player, although you also hear stories of people signing players from one trainer in bulk so they can – the bulk of that money gets redirected to one player, and the lesser players don't get as much. Basically what I was going to ask, Jesse, is the system does not seem to be working the way that anybody in baseball necessarily drew it up. You know, the draft, I think, is working to some extent, at least to what MLB's goals were with it. The international – system does not. And like I said, I mean, it's kind of silly where you can't officially sign these guys to July 2nd, but these guys all have deals done months and months in advance. What do you think is going to happen in the future? Could we see an international draft? I mean, that seems to be coming. Do you think that could happen as soon as the next CBA in a couple of years? And if not, what do you think will happen? Because it seems unlikely that this will just go on or allowed to be go on and remain unchecked going forward.
Right. It's a tricky subject. The international draft has always been a tricky subject. I think the commissioner has gone on record to say, you know, it's inevitable. This is going to happen. It's the talk in Latin America. It's the talk among teams. And I think ultimately it comes back to the single point entry. I mean, everybody wants to, in Latin America and the United States, to be evaluated the same way, to be scouted the same way, and paid the same way. I think I've heard that from the Latin American side for several years that, they wanted to be paid the same way as the domestic kids. Forever, kids were getting paid $5,000, $20,000, $50,000. Up until recently, were kids, these teenagers, 16-year-olds, really getting over $1 million? There have been the occasional large signing bonuses, but for the most part, they were not signing for millions of dollars. It was in the $1,000, you know, range. You know, $50,000, $100,000, $200,000. You know, is the system working? I mean, obviously it needs to be tweaked. There are teams that have so much money they can afford to pay the penalty, and they will go past the penalty, and basically they'll pay the tax, which is double the overage on the maximum penalty. They can afford to do that. But for some clubs, it has worked. I mean, it has kept them from going over the penalty. They can't afford to pay a tax that the Dodgers would be able to afford, that a team like the Cubs, the Rangers, the Yankees, you know, some of the bigger market teams, they are the ones who are really, I don't want to say taking advantage, but they just don't seem to be bothered too much by the financial restraints, by the penalties. But I do think there is a large percentage of the clubs that do adhere to those rules and don't want to get into the penalties because they can't afford it. I mean, what the future is, I mean, I definitely think, as you mentioned, the upcoming CBA, maybe they talk about penalties, maybe they become more severe, maybe they, limit the signings. I mean, I'm really not sure what the answer is. I mean, this has been the draft, an international draft, has been a topic of conversation for over a decade. And I think it's really come into the spotlight this year with Yoan Moncada, I mean, Yoan Moncada signed for $31 million as an international guy, you know, and he really opened the eyes of a lot of people. People are wondering, like, how did this young kid, 19 years old from Cuba, get this big contract, $31 million, and his team has to pay $31 million in penalty, you know, the Boston Red Sox. But he was such a unique case, a unique, you know, there was a track record there, the talent level there. He is, you know, he there's everybody else, there's Yoan Moncada than everybody else. But what Yoan Moncada does has really brought focus onto the system, because before Moncada, people were not making this kind of money. People were clubs were not investing this kind of money. And it's still the big market teams who are doing this. I'm not exactly sure what the answer is going to be. I can see some tweaks when the next CBA comes up. The international draft seems inevitable, according to the commissioner. That's something, I mean, but that's a tricky subject in its own right, trying to get all these teams to, you know, coordinate all these teams to agree on rules. Do you force countries into the international draft? I mean, it's a really complex, you know, tricky situation.
From what you're saying, Jesse, it sounds like penalty is not a deterrent in the international marketplace. If a team sees a player that they project, they think is going to be a star, they're just, it sounds like the way business is being conducted now, they're just going forward.
You know what? I mean, for some big market clubs, that's what's happening. The Yankees did that last year. They signed 27 guys who they believe are 27 top guys, and they paid their, you know, their bonuses, and then they're going to pay 100% tax on those guys, which is basically double. You know, a similar situation this year with the Dodgers. They're going after several top prospects. They're going to pay a high bonus amount for these guys and then pay 100% tax on the same players. That's double. So for the big market clubs, it doesn't seem to be a deterrent. I mean, they have the money. They can afford it. But in some ways, that's kind of consistent with what happens in baseball. The big markets, you know, get the big free agents. The big markets get the big TV contracts. I mean, that's not really anything new under the sun there. But I think what baseball is trying to do is even the playing field, where the Brewers, you know, where the Rays, where different people can also play on this international, on the international scene without the big boys coming in, signing everybody because they can and afford to pay the penalty. Like Jim says, there's probably going to be some tweaks. I don't think people anticipated clubs would not disregard, but would just, you know, blow past their pool amount and pay the penalty and just keep on moving and just pretty much sign as many guys as they can.
It's a story worth keeping our eye on. We thank you, Jesse, for joining us today. Thank you so much for being with us. And on behalf of Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis, I'm Ed Randall. Thanks so much for listening, everybody, to the Pipeline Podcast.